My name is Matt Kamen.
And I'm Chris Spear.
And we're part of a new breed of sales and leadership professionals creating a movement
that you've probably never even heard of before.
We're waging war against 50 years of old school thinking through a radical movement filled with people just like you who want to lead the change.
We have to do things differently.
We have to do things smarter.
We have to do things better.
We are the Rockstar Movement.
And these are our stories.
What's up, everybody? What's up? What's up? What's up? Matt here, and I am so excited right now because we have got a special guest today on Rockstar Moments, and she's been a keynote speaker at previous Rockstar events, and she's going to be with us in May, which I can't tell you how excited I am about this. I want to welcome onto the show our friend Katie Mayers. Katie, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Matt?
To have you on the show. Thank you.
Oh, you know what the answer to that is? It's nothing interesting. I had no idea, if I could be so honest. I wasn't one of those kids that like knew that I wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer. I did know I wanted to help people. Like I knew that. I just didn't know in what facet. For the longest time, though, I worked in fashion, and I loved it. And I worked. And some people who know me or have seen me on interviews, I have over 376 pairs of shoes, something like that. So I worked in a shoe retailer for a long time. So I'd have to say it was more about helping people. When I was small, when I was young, I loved fashion and spending money. I knew that wasn't going to get me far. I knew it was going to cost me a lot. But really, I think it was all about helping people in some, you know, way, shape, or form. And not an ounce of me would have known that I would be traveling the world, motivational speaking, training people, helping people in that respect. And so it's a boring answer, but I had no idea.
I don't think it's that boring. How did you shift it? Because I got to tell you, like, I know when you came and did our first Rockstar event, like the feedback was overwhelmingly positive. Everybody was like, holy cow, that was so powerful. Like, man, all that, like Katie's session really moved me. How did you move into the role you're in now? Maybe give people a little bit of a backstory on like how, you know, what your history is, what you did before this, and how you became the Katie that everybody now is clamoring to be able to get to speak at their events. Like, how did that come about?
Oh my gosh. So I started in retail, and I worked every position you could imagine from a retail front. So from greeter in a store to stock associate, all the way up to running departments for a national company, starting departments, creating standards. And one day, this was a family run company, and I loved who I worked for, but they got purchased out. And as they say, people work for people. So I didn't love the people who came in, and I didn't love what their values stood for and what the culture of the company was turning into. So I left there and went to specialty medical, so dental. And in dental, I went back to school. And so I had all three kids at this time, went back to school, got my master's in adult training and development, because while I was in this corporation as executive director of education, I built Canada's first online educational platform for the dental industry. So it was in those moments that I actually really, you know, came into my own about loving to help people and educate people. And so I went back to school for that. And created something pretty awesome that still exists today, and it's a revenue building, revenue generating business for them, which is super exciting. I went there into another dental sort of corporation where it was smaller, and we were at about six clinics when I went over, and grew it to about 26. clinics when I was done, and I was the managing operations manager of the entire organization. And so from there, I then went over as COO of Canada's, actually North America's largest dental consulting company. And in that sort of transition, I, you know, came up against, you know, a need to inspire, a need to motivate, a need to train. And I had reached out to one of my mentors, John DeJulius, who is phenomenal. And he is the, he is the king of customer experience. So I've learned from the best. And so he kind of took me under his wing. And at this point, I loved training and I loved inspiring, but I hated big groups. So up until about 4 years ago, I could not speak in front of more than five people. I could not. I felt so nervous. I felt like I'd throw up in the first 5 minutes. There was no way that was happening. But he took me under his wing and he gave me the skills that I needed and took me on as his first independent consultant. And that's kind of how I got into speaking and training on a consultancy level. And then finally, I realized this job hopping in 3 years, one job after another, the common denominator was me. And I really did some soul searching and, you know, really found out that it was about not helping just one organization grow. I wanted to give everything that I had to a ton of organizations because that way I can help people. And I guess this goes back to your original question. I want to help lots of people know more so they can do more and be the best version of themselves, whether it's personal or professional. So that's kind of how I got into where I am today.
Quick question, because I love hearing that story. What do you think? Because a lot of folks say, you know, hey, I want to get better. I want to level up my life. I want to move my career forward. Uh-huh. What have you seen with all the folks that you've been helping? Because you went from dental, you do a lot now in automotive. Yeah. So you're in a lot of different verticals. If you were to look across all those different verticals, just human beings being human beings, what do you think is the number one roadblock that you've seen that people struggle with that kind of keeps them from getting to the next level? By the way, Chris Hill said, Katie is so freaking talented, and we 100% agree. So what do you think is that number one? And Syed says, hello, Syed, thanks for joining the show. So what do you think is like the number one challenge that folks have, that roadblock that keeps them from getting to that next level, that next step?
Yeah, so I think there's two things. One is fear. Every single roadblock we come up against or obstacle, there's something that pushes us to do or not do something. And usually if you self-check when you come up against that sort of obstacle or roadblock and you ask yourself, am I afraid? 9 times out of 10. They're afraid. They're afraid of the outcome. They're afraid of, you know, the insecurities they have in themselves, the lack of confidence. And so we actually tend not to take the risks that we need to because we want to stay comfortable and we don't want to push past our fear. So having courage is so, so, so important. The second thing is that people don't like to sweat the small stuff because it's hard work. I don't know, that book way back in the day that, you know, got launched where it said, don't sweat the small stuff. I actually believe the complete opposite. I think we need to sweat every little thing that we do because that's what amounts to something really big. And so if we can't be honest with ourselves, push past our fear and sweat the small stuff to do things consistently, then, I mean, we're getting in our own way over and over again.
True story. That's an awesome answer. You know, a lot of folks, speaking of fear, you know, you had mentioned earlier, you know, you had never spoken to more than like five people at a time. And now you're speaking to rooms full of people and all this stuff. And I know you had a great coach. Did you say John DeJulia? Was that?
John DeJulius.
So what like clicked inside you that helped you just go, you know what? I'm going to step through this fear and just do it. What changed with you internally that made you just feel like it was worth taking that risk?
Oh yeah, that's like, oh my gosh, it's a journey. I can tell you the particular moment where I kind of said, screw this, and I'm just ready to take on the world. And that was about 3 years ago in the summer. I was driving in my car, you know, sunroof open, music blaring, enjoying it. I was on my way to actually like a doctor's appointment. And it was just a regular yearly checkup. And I had been wanting to have this tattoo, which is this one right here. And I've been wanting it for a while. And there was something that was keeping me back. And it was almost that fear of, can I get it? What are people going to say if I have a tattoo that is visible, being a female, trying to break through, a male profession? But then there was a lot of things in my life. I'm a mom of three. And, if we go back to my backstory, when I was 26 and I almost died delivering my twins. And so when I finally came to 4 days after the birth, and they were in the NICU for 2 months and I was in the hospital for a month, and we kind of went through that journey. And then I had my next baby. I'd spent, four years just being mom, being wife. And previous to that, my parents are, they suffer with substance abuse when it comes to alcoholism. And my whole life, I've been taking care of my parents, my sister, my brother. And the only person I wasn't taking care of was myself. So there was this one day I'm kind of driving down the street and I'm having a good old time and I'm feeling really good. The sun is shining and I see a tattoo parlor. So I see this tattoo parlor and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do this. So I moved past my fear and I just pulled into the tattoo parlor. I went in, I got my tattoo, which stands for, my three kids, but also their birds. So taking flight. And I promised myself that day that I wasn't going to let fear be what dictates me. Got back in my car and I went on to my doctor's appointment. So I'd have to say there's a journey behind it. But that moment was a moment for me where I was like, you know what? And this was about 3 years ago, where I was like, I'm done. I'm like, I'm done being what other people need me to be. And I'm going to be what I've been put on this earth to do. And I'm going to show up in life and I'm going to be the best I can for others, but I'm also going to be the best I can for myself. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's a journey, I guess. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh gosh, there are so many. There are so many. Oh my goodness. And I think that's why I love automotive so much, because you can only go up from here is what I think. I was actually watching Mary Poppins with my kids last night, and Mary Poppins Returns, and the last song is the whole quote around it is there's only up from here, and they take these balloons and they're flying into the air, and I truly believe that in automotive. I think that the expectation of consumers of the industry is so low that you literally can only go up and knock their socks off. So I think it's like a really cool niche to be part of, because there's some industries that are, look at retail, hospitality, finance is another one that's kind of close to automotive, but you have a bit of a higher expectation. So it's harder to satisfy your customers. It's harder to, make them knock their socks off, go above and beyond for them. But in automotive, your customers, the customers that come in, man or woman, coupled, single, teenager, grown up, grandparent, when they walk into a dealership, they're already expecting a poor experience. Like, they're armed for it. So I think it's just such a cool place to be, because if we just went from transaction to interaction and we got over ourselves and we decided to push past the fear of change, we could have like an insane transformation when it comes to people not wanting to go online and actually buy cars and actually want to visit the dealership. I think the online movement is going to happen only because people don't like coming into a dealership. But I think that we can change that. And I think we can evolve and push past that. From a female perspective, because I speak a lot about, you know, the female perspective of the females that work there, because I believe if you don't have a culture that women want to work for, women aren't going to want to shop in it. I also think from a female consumer perspective, we are the decision maker and there's no two ways around it. So it's time to evolve and it's time to create that experience. But just as an overall consumer experience, I've had the ability to work with organizations all over the world. And the funny thing is creating a five-star experience is not that hard, but it's a choice. It's a choice to evolve from the place that you're standing right now into, you know, a transformation where you have interaction with your customers and you're creating loyalty and referrals. And, you know, you can't imagine doing business with anyone else. So, I mean, I think there's so much that needs to happen in automotive, but what the really cool thing is, and I don't think dealers or OEMs know, is that you literally can only go up from here.
I think that's really good feedback. And you mentioned something there when you were talking about the online buying experience, right?
Yeah.
How you said, I think that people will shift from wanting to buy online to wanting to buy in the store if we make these changes. Now, I hear a lot of folks, those who are just fighting, you know, digital retailing. And one of the biggest stats that they share is only like less than 3% of people are transacting online, right? So we know it's a small amount, and the majority of that is Tesla, right?
Yep.
So we know that's where it is. But we see that outside of automotive, a lot of people are shopping online, right? I live on Amazon. As I told you earlier, I have an Amazon delivery coming today. I have Amazon deliveries every day, other than perishable food items.
Yeah.
Everything I buy is on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Why do you think, because with consumers loving to shop online, I'm curious your perspective. Why do you think consumers are slow to make the change to actually purchasing a vehicle online? I mean, cars haven't changed a lot. A Toyota Camry owner knows that they love their Toyota Camry. If they're committed to buying one, why do you think they're having a hard time pulling the trigger on buying a car online?
Well, I mean, I think other than the fact that it's like the second and maybe the biggest purchase you ever make in your life, if you're not a homeowner, it is the largest purchase you're going to make. If you're a homeowner, it's the second largest purchase you'll make. So for me, I could never imagine purchasing a car online. Like I would want to go in. I want to feel some trust. I want to test it out. I want to know that I'm valuable to the organization. I want to know that I have a point person, that when something goes wrong with the vehicle, I have somebody that I can know and trust and go to. So I think for any, and a whole other side to that is that people still want a connection. People still want relationships. So even though we're buying the simple things online, the bigger items are still, you know, they want to go in and trust you. They want to get to know you. And so automotive, even though the experience is not stellar, they still feel more comfortable coming through those doors and touching and feeling and smelling the new car smell and smiling and meeting somebody and having a conversation. So I personally don't think the online purchase of automotive vehicles are going to make a huge sway and huge swing. I do think people are still going to want to come in and purchase in person. But the difference is they're going to do, and like they're doing now, they're going to do all their research online. So they know exactly what they want. They know what they want to pay for it. They know their trim level. They know if they want to lease or finance. They know what percentage they want to lease or finance for. They know the bottom line price. They know all of this. So the only thing they're looking for when they come to visit the dealership is a relationship, an experience. So please sell to me through who you are and the trust that you garner with me, why I should buy from you, because I know I can go in and purchase this from any Honda dealership. I could go in and purchase from any BMW. I can go in and purchase from any Lexus, any Toyota. So they're actually buying the people and the experience. They're not buying the vehicle because they've already made their decision.
Now let's talk about that, because I joke, I tease a little bit, but there's some seriousness to this. I've given a lot of car salespeople crap about, I'm like, look, a lot of them are going live, right? Like lately we see a lot of car salespeople like, hey, I'm going live. And then they share a lot of good, sometimes a lot of good stuff, but not at all related to automotive or buying a car, right? And I tease a little and I say, look, if I'm shopping for a car, like I'm not looking, you're not Tony Robbins, right? Like I don't go in a dealership for, when you say they want the relationship, I'm looking to dig in and get a little clarity, because for me, when I go in a dealership, I'm not going there to find a friend. I'm not going, I hope today, like today's the day, I hope I make a new friend and I hope they're a car salesman. Like, and I'm a 25 year car guy. But Laura, by the way, Laura Berman says hi. Hi, Laura.
Hi. So
I'm a 25 year car guy. I know firsthand 90% of the people that work in dealerships are fantastic human beings, right? Of course, we know, just like any profession, there are a few that aren't great, but most folks that work in dealers are just everyday folks. That's their job. And they're great and they're loving and they're caring. But I still, like, I don't walk in there desiring a relationship or a friendship. I'm going to buy once every couple of years. Well, most people do. I buy every 6 months. So when I look at that the desire to have a relationship, is it because you feel like it's the after the sale relationship that somebody will be there if they have a need? Or is it the relationship like to handhold because they're afraid of the spend? When you say they're looking for a relationship, maybe help people understand that a little more.
Yeah. So, I mean, we make decisions based off our limbic brain, right? So the emotion and memory hub of our brain is how we make decisions. We don't make decisions based off of facts and figures, because if we did that, everybody would purchase a car online. So we actually want to feel something when we come in the store. Now, it doesn't mean we're going to be best friends and buddies, but we want to know that the person that is selling to us, that we can trust them. So to your point, Matt, you know, it's the after sale, the in-between sort of interactions, so they know who they can come back to in the next few years when they're purchasing a vehicle. But also after the fact, you know, from a service perspective, they have a place and they have people that they can trust. So I don't mean we're going to become best buddies. I mean, we don't have most of us. I mean, it's so hard to give our attention to our own family these days, let alone making new friends and having best friends all over the place, and especially in a dealership. But what I mean is creating a relationship where the customer feels like you care about them, that the customer can make, because they're making their decision based off of how they feel about you, and then you're a direct reflection of the brand. And that is what they're basing their, you know, off the limbic brain, is whether they're saying yes. They're saying yes to you. So when I talk about relationship, it's a relationship that allows you to earn trust, a relationship that allows you to know that, you know, that person's going to be there. They're not, they're being transparent. They're not trying to, you know, snake me out of some money. They're giving me the best deal. But a relationship nonetheless, not a friendship. I didn't say friendship, not a friendship, but a relationship.
Nice.
I hope that answers your question.
it totally does. And let's talk about the shopping experience, because we know a lot of folks go online. They do research online. One of the challenges, and I talk to a lot of friends when they're talking about car shopping, and I say, look, when you go in the dealership, be transparent with the dealer, right? I'm a big advocate of, as the consumer, if you go in, don't go in there lying, you know, thinking, well, they're going to lie to me, so I have to lie first, right?
Yeah.
One of the biggest challenges, you go in, you go, I want a $200 payment. It's like, you're paying $500 now. Like, it's not going to go down $300. Yeah. Like, what that?
Yeah.
But I know that when folks are going in to buy a car, there are good ways to prepare and there are good things you can do to set yourself up for success, to having a good interaction with the dealership, to making sure you get a fair deal. What are some things, if you think from a consumer perspective, walking in the store, like what are some things that consumers do that actually make it harder for them to buy a car? What are some things that they're doing that just aren't great?
Well, from a consumer standpoint, I mean, and I did a study from a female consumer standpoint, and I'm going to bet you it's the same all around. But, you know, as I said, the industry is at its like lowest level in terms of expectations. So they're going in and they're going in armed. These consumers are like, I've got my armor on, and you're not going to spool me, and you're not going to, you know, do the five finger thing over my, you know, like whatever terminology. I'm not going to be your next up. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to make sure I'm treated as a person, and you're not going to screw me out of my deal. And this is what I want. And this is the trim level I want. So they go in with this armor. And this armor of I'm not letting you in until you can prove to me that that you're trustworthy. And so they make it very difficult because they put a wall up before they even walk through your dealership. They are like they've got this this armor on that is going to keep this sales associate from actually giving them the best experience possible. So I think it's a two-way street, but it started because the automotive industry has this reputation. And so because of that reputation, these are the experiences and expectations of the customers. So they're just protecting themselves. And I think we need to protect ourselves a little less. But in order for that to happen, the automotive dealers, they need to provide an experience that warrants us to let our guard down.
I think that's absolutely fantastic advice. Laura said, today's environment is very different. There's so much more need for transparency and rapport building to last a lifetime. I think those are good words. You know, dealers, you know, I see a lot of dealers really trying. They're trying to communicate, hey, we're going to give you a good experience, right? We're going to make it easy for you to buy. And I think they genuinely mean that, and they're genuinely trying. So let's say the consumer comes in, armor up, ready to do battle.
Yeah.
What do you think? Oh, Clinton Bramlett, by the way, just said, I seriously enjoyed your presentation at the last Rockstar.
Oh, thank you.
How, as a dealer, how do you kindly, you know, and gently diffuse that when someone comes in armed for battle? How do we lovingly communicate like, hey, you don't need to fight. I'm going to give you what you want. Like, I'll give you everything. How does a dealer do that without coming across word tracky and cheesy?
I mean, there's a ton of things. The first thing that comes off the top of my head is to be genuine. And a lot of the times, especially because, and I hate to say it, but over 80%, it's close to 90% of the sales associates in automotive are men. And so from an emotional intelligence perspective, we are not trained to read our customers and, you know, appropriately react to give them the experience that customer needs at the time. But I would say my biggest piece of advice would to be genuine. And I actually created this connect formula, and I shared it at the last Rockstar conference, and I'll share it again this time. But in there on connect, it's, you know, one of the steps is to reveal vulnerabilities. And so I think what's really important for automotive sales associates, dealers, OEMs, is to become human. And to really kind of break down their own walls so that they are human to the customer, which then breaks down the customer's armor. And so, you know, and I don't mean reveal vulnerabilities like overshare about your girlfriend breaking your heart or, you know, I mean, unless the customer goes that way and gives permission, but more about, hey, you know, your son, Johnny, you know, you feel like a taxi driver when you're driving around for hockey or soccer or whatever it is. And that's what the type of vehicle they need to make it easy and convenient to get in and out. You know what? My son, oh my gosh, I can't tell you. Like, yeah, I feel like a taxi driver as well. I have to take him to hockey and soccer, and my daughter is in ballet. That's what I mean. Become human. Reveal vulnerabilities and know, like, I got you. I understand exactly what you're saying. And now because I understand what you're saying and you know I do, they'll trust the fact that you're putting them into a vehicle that's right for them.
That's so awesome stuff. Clinton Bramlett said that's where my background in psychology comes in handy. I agree with all of this. So it can be a challenging time. Now let's shift gears to something. I'm going to go off script here because a lot of folks are seeing the public persona of Katie, right, all over, and seeing you speaking at events, things like that. But what's something, let's shift into like your personal world. What's something, speaking of getting vulnerable, what is something that people...
I walked right into that one, didn't I?
You did, and I'm so, so glad. What's something that people don't know about you? Like something like here. A lot of people know I have tattoos and all this stuff. Some people know this, but not many do. That years ago, I used to be a youth pastor, so I worked with teens and stuff like that. Yeah, and ordained. So if you ever need to get married, I can do it. So let me ask you this: what's something people don't know about you?
Oh my gosh. That's a hard one because my life is so so public, but you know, part of my life that isn't public is I actually try very hard to be present with my family. So I know if you notice, my stories only pick up when I'm traveling. I'm constantly on stories or posting pictures when I'm traveling, but when I'm home, I'm actually quite private. So I guess something to note about me that maybe people don't know and would be odd because you see me on social media, I actually don't love social media. I do it because I want people to know, I want people to know what I'm up to. And unfortunately in this world, you have to, it's part of the deal. It's part of, you know, building a brand. But I don't love it. And I'm not that person that's going to document. I document my life. I take photos and I have people take photos of me with my family, but it's not to share with the world. So I'm actually a very private person, even though I'm extremely public and I'm very open. I mean, what you see is what you get. And if you were to ask me about my kids or ask me about what's going on in my life, I will tell you everything. But I enjoy being present. So a lot of people may or may not know that I'm a big yogi and I meditate. I have these post-it notes around my house that says, what's your relationship with the present moment? So when I get home, my phone goes in a drawer and I'm present with my kids. So I don't know if that's, you know, the type of weird stuff you're looking for or type of interesting things about me, but I don't love being socially on all the time. Like you'll never see me go out with my husband and take, you know, a story with my husband because that's unfair to him. And I should be living in that moment. So I don't know if that's what you're looking for.
Oh, I love it. You know, it's fantastic to hear that. It's funny. About 2015, I like got off of social. Like I got off of Facebook. I peeled everything back. I stepped away. And Eric Milch, which you may probably know from Dealer Teamwork, and Bobby Heron, two really good friends of mine, both gave me so much crap. They were like, you can't not be on Facebook. I'm like, I don't care about Facebook. I want to live my life. And they're like, but for what you're doing with your brand, you have to be visible. And they were right. But like you, like maybe even more so, I hate social. I hate sharing. I hate social media. There's so much. I think one of the best things I heard, it was Michael Cirillo said, so many people are busy living their best fake lives on Facebook. And I think
that's,
it drives me nuts. And so so I love that you shared that because and now I know I'm not the only one that's like, I'm all over social, but it's not because I love being on social. It's kind of because you have to be there so people know that you still exist. It's funny. I just did some, it's goofy because people make assumptions that they know us based on our social presence. And I just had this radical, people have, you know, midlife crises. And I had a radical midlife uncrisis. So I sold my, I don't know why, but I got this wild hair that I wanted to have this, bohemian McConaughey type summer of outdoorsiness and getting healthy. So I sold my Jag and went and bought a used Honda Element stick shift with a whole bunch of miles that I can throw paddle boards in so that this summer, I was like, all right, I'm ditching the luxury car. And I literally bought a little stick shift Honda Element and went, I'm probably going to hate it in 2 months, but I'm committed to this summer of just down, like stepping down on everything to see what that's like, because I've spent a lot of years chasing. Now I share this because I see a lot of folks posting all over social memes about hustling hard, right? You gotta hustle 24/7, hustle humble, grind it out. And they say all these things like money never sleeps. And by the way, I can only tease about this because I've been that and said that.
Yeah.
But it's so prevalent in the auto industry. I see like this celebration of working 70 or 80 hours a week in this celebration of living work and yeah. and which means time away from your friends and away from your family. And if you could give one snippet of advice to all these folks that are bragging about, I think they've watched what Gary Vaynerchuk does and they've got a little bit too obsessed with that. If you could give them one piece of advice, what would it be about this 24/7 work process?
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, so I have, I have somebody who works with me from a marketing perspective and I said, okay, you know, give me the 5 things I need to do from a social experience, from a social perspective, 5 things. That's it in a week. I'm going to do 5 things. So if that includes 3 Instagram posts and 1 Facebook Live and 1 article, whatever it is, but 5 things, that's all I'm going to do. 5 things. I got back this plan with like the 5 or 6 posts I need to make per day. And I was like, no. So and this goes to fear. Okay. So my one piece of advice is it goes back to fear. I mean, I said, no, I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to build my business the way everybody else is building their business. If it takes me 2 years longer to get where I want to be, then so be it. But I've actually been present in my life and I'm living my best life and not living life for everyone else. But it comes against fear of not being included, fear of not having, and we all do it. We're like Instagram, Facebook obsessed. We are actually addicted to the dopamine hits that we get when we go on to see how many likes, how many views, and you know, how many shares. And we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty of it too. When I post a new photo on Instagram or when I post a new video on LinkedIn, I want to see, okay, I'm at 4,000 views, 5,000 views. I'm like, and even I am guilty of it, but I'm guilty of it because that's the way our world is. And I guess my biggest piece of advice is to push past your fear that you won't succeed if you don't do it like everyone else. And the thing is that those who succeed actually do it, dare to do it differently than everyone else.
I love it.
Be true to you. And if that means it takes a few, a few extra years to get where you are, well, those few extra years you've added, 30 hours a week to being present and living your life. So is it really a downfall? I don't know. I think it's pretty great. And I say it over and over, and I actually was having a conversation with Lisa Copeland, last week. And I was like commending her because she is awesome. Like she is a rock star. And I can't believe I'm so honored that twice in a row I get to share a stage with her. It's insane to me because she's a mentor of mine and I absolutely love her. But I think she's got a great balance of, she's got her 15 minutes of fierce in the morning and she posts as she goes, but you don't see her scrambling. She owns her own. And so what I would say is, and when I was talking to her, I said, I don't have time and it's not a priority for me to be online because my clients, my partners, they deserve the best of me. My family, they deserve the best of me. And online takes time and my priority is the people in my life. Not necessarily the, when I do Facebook Lives, I get great response. It's fantastic. And I love giving information out and I love helping others, but the people that are standing right in front of me, they're in front of me and they matter. And so, I dare to do it differently. So I would say, get over your fear of winning the race, because your race can be won at your own pace because you're only competing against yourself. So I would say, get rid of that fear. I don't know.
That's strong. it's funny that you bring this up with Lisa and a real world example. Lisa was supposed to be live on the show yesterday. She was with a client and she said, it ended up going longer. I'm with a client down here. I need to reschedule. And that just shows like Lisa's love of the people right in front of her, right? She was being present with the people right there. Laura Berman says, love this, Katie Mayers. Can't wait to hear you speak at Rockstar. And Clinton said, yes, love what you're saying. This is awesome. This is great stuff, Katie.
Let's shift off of
business stuff for a minute, because we know you're going to be at Rockstar, which by the way, I don't know if you know this, but Monday night, Flick Fusion is powering the party that we're having at the Place on 7th. So the Downtown Project folks, they own a couple properties down there, and we've got this building from them with an outdoor stage, and we have a live band, Stoked, coming into play. But that's not all. Stoked is also going to be doing live band karaoke so that the attendees can be the rock star. So it's going to be some pretty fun stuff. So I'm warming you up now, because the next question I'm going to ask is this. What's your favorite? Let's shift this to some music for a minute. It wouldn't be rock star if we didn't talk about it. What's your like all-time favorite band, and maybe like, and I know favorite songs shift throughout our lives, but what's your, like, if you had one band, you're like, this is all I could listen to. I'm on an island forever. What band, what audio would you take with you to the island? And if you could, what's like your favorite song right now that you jam out to?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I am such a boring individual. My grandparents were opera singers. So I grew up with opera musicals, you know, classical music. And I would actually, if you can imagine this, they had this huge house in the country, beautiful home, like, you know, 20 acres around. It was huge. But they had this room they called the Florida room, right? So it was bricks internally, and the whole ceiling was glass. So the room really, you know, heated up to feel like you were in Florida, even in the dead of winter. Well, in that room, my grandfather had his organ and a killer, killer sound system. And so I would close all the doors, and I would sit there and I would sing for hours to myself, The Phantom of the Opera, Les Mis, Jewel, Shania Twain. So I'm much more of a, I love country music, but I love musicals. And so I love Andrew Lloyd Webber. You know, I actually, little trivia on me, I actually sang in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I used to do choir. Now the only people that hear me sing are my children at nighttime. So good luck getting me up on that stage.
Yes. That's so
And, and if it is, it's going to be a lullaby like Somewhere Over the Rainbow. So it'll be, you know, so it's, I don't think I necessarily have a favorite song. Although I do love Calvin Harris, Promises. That is one song that I will jam out to in the car. Otherwise, you will hear me sing Michael Bublé or Josh Groban. Or so I'm very much a musical and classical type music lover.
Nice. I know before we went live, folks don't know this, but your daughter was playing piano upstairs. It was so, she's so good. And she's, what did you say, eight?
She's eight, yeah. She's playing Beethoven and Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Ah, it was beautiful. Congratulations. She's obviously very talented. So that's super cool. Super cool stuff to hear. So
yeah.
As we get, we're going to get ready to wrap up here soon. Couple things. Mm-hmm. I know you know this. We've announced it a couple days ago, but we decided to do something really radical with Rockstar Events. And we decided for the rest of this year, we're going to make them free for dealers to attend, because we really want to make sure folks get to hear the great messages from folks like you and Lisa and Frank and Sean and Anthony and Christian and Malcolm. Oh man. I mean, it's just, there's Coach Sherry Wynn is coming back, which she wasn't at the event you were at. I don't believe she's been there before. Two-time Olympic champion, national championship women's basketball coach, just an amazing human being. So we've been pretty blessed to have so many great folks like you come in and share your knowledge on the Rockstar stage. You're going to be talking to folks about evolving, right? Evolving themselves. Let me ask you this. If I were to say, what's one takeaway that folks will get if you were the only speaker and they were like, I'm just coming to hear Katie, what's one thing that they'll take away from your session that they really need to hear?
Oh gosh, one thing that they'll really need to hear is to stop making excuses and start making changes.
That is the absolute best answer I could have ever asked for. That is so awesome. Listen, we removed all the excuses. So for those of you that are just now hearing this, there are a couple of amazing things going on. So Katie is part of an awesome group of speakers that are going to be delivering keynotes at the upcoming Rockstar event. And we have this whole section of day one dedicated to the women who rock. And Katie is one of them. You know, you mentioned earlier a lot of stuff from the female perspective when it comes to being in a dealership and shopping for a car, right? You said, look, if they don't want to work there, they definitely don't want to buy there. And one thing that Chris and I realized, it was actually after the Rockstar event that you spoke at, we started taking a hard look and we were like, you know, 80, 90% of the speakers that were applying and that were applying to speak at our event were men.
Yeah.
And so almost everyone that spoke at Rockstar were men. And we said, listen, we need to, if the culture is going to shift, we have to push that shift sometimes. And so we're just stoked to have you, Carrie Wise, Lisa Copeland, Coach Wynn, Michelle Denegene from Roadster, and Kendrick Shope, Grace in the Rockstar stage, and bringing a perspective that I think a lot of folks need to hear. It's this has been a good old boys club ever since I've ever been in automotive. It truly has. And it was very easy for us to say, well, we're not part of that because we don't believe that. But then we started looking at our demographic and we went, well, who are we targeting? Who we're familiar with, which is
yep.
a bunch of dudes. So I'm excited that you're going to be there. I want to say thank you again for coming out and rocking the stage in Las Vegas. Even if you won't rock the karaoke stage, thank you for coming out and speaking at the event. We're so excited to have you there, Katie. And thank you for taking the time today. I know you're, you know, with your family and it's Good Friday and it's Easter weekend. So thank you so much for being live with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me on. And honestly, thank you for inviting me to Rockstar. It is an awesome event. And if anybody, especially now with this fantastic Dealers Come for Free, you are missing out on the learning. I've spoken at pretty much every single automotive conference there is out there. And the fact of the matter is you have some stellar speakers with some amazing knowledge who are willing to get intimate and personal and really be there to help you. And so if you haven't gotten your ticket yet, then I don't know why. And as Matt says, he's now removed all excuses. And if you want to evolve, you got to make a choice to attend Rockstar.
Thanks so much for that. And if you want to go to Rockstar, all you've got to do is go to rockstarinfo.com. You can see that URL below Katie and below myself. Go to rockstarinfo.com, click on the tickets link. All you got to do is check the box to add your tickets to the cart. And to make it even easier, you can check the box and you can pay for your hotel through us and we'll do all the booking to make your life easier. Hey, Katie, if people want to connect with you online, if they want to connect with you to pay you to come in and work with their organization, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
So, I mean, online, I'm on all social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. So you can definitely direct message me there. You can also, you know, reach my website, www.katiemayers.com. You can send, information there. You can email me at katie@katiemayers.com. So a multitude of ways to get a hold of me.
Awesome. Thank you again for being here, Katie. We're going to go ahead and close out the show. Have a great Good Friday with your family and have a wonderful
Thank
Easter
you.
With all the folks that you're connected
yes.
with. Thanks,
Thank
Katie.
Thank you.
We'll
you too.
You
Take care. Bye.
My name is Matt Kingman.
And I'm Chris Spear.
And we're part of a new breed of sales and leadership professionals creating a movement
that you've probably never even heard of before.
We're waging war against 50 years of old school thinking through a radical movement filled with people just like you who want to lead the change.
We have to do things differently.
We have to do things smarter.
We have to do things better.
We are the Rockstar Movement.
And these are our stories.